Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 1 at 20,658. S&P 500 Index up 1 at 2,357. NASDAQ Composite up 3 at 5,880. Russell 2000 Small and Mid Caps up 2 at 1,367. Kind of like watching paint dry. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 1 basis point at 2.36%. Oil up 91 cents at $53.15 per barrel. Gold up 60 cents at $12.55.40 an ounce. Fed Chair Janet Yellen held a Q&A session today at the University of Michigan. Yellen said the Fed's task has shifted from a post-crisis exercise of healing the economy to one aimed at sustaining progress. Yellen said, "Before we had to press down on the gas pedal trying to give the economy all the oomph that we possibly could. Now," she says, "the Fed is trying to give it some gas, but not so much that we're pushing down hard on the accelerator. The appropriate stance of policy now is closer to, let me call it, neutral." That still likely means two more rate hikes this year. Minutes of their March meeting showed that most Fed officials also expect to begin shrinking the bank's $4.5 trillion balance sheet later in the year, gradually reversing emergency bond purchases made during the financial crisis and recession. In last week's minutes, the Fed policymakers also warned that stock prices were on the high side, specifically saying broad equity price indexes rose further, leaving some standard measures of valuation above historical norms, and adding some measures of valuations, such as price-to-earnings ratios, rose further above historical norms. Now, the Fed is not known for its stock-picking or timing skills, but this week the proof is in the pudding as earnings season kicks into gear. Earnings of S&P 500 companies are estimated to have risen 10.1% in the first 3 months of the year. The index is currently trading at 17.4 times forward earnings estimates. That's above its long-term average of 15, according to Thomson Reuters IBES. J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo scheduled to report their earnings on Thursday. The financial sector has been a darling performer since the election on anticipation of deregulation and tax reform policies that have yet to materialize. So look for the focus to shift to earnings. Wells Fargo's board of directors has released its investigation into the bank's recent fraudulent accounts scandal, pinning blame primarily on two former executives. According to the report, Wells Fargo's board will claw back $28 million in pay from former CEO John Stumpf and $47 million from former head of community banking Carrie Ulstedt for their roles in the scandal. The board determined that Stumpf and Ulstedt did not do enough to address the culture at Wells that set quotas for bank employees to open as many as 2 million credit card and retail banking accounts for customers from 2011 to 2015 without the client's knowledge. According to the report, Stumpf was aware of individual issues as far back as 2002, but did not become aware of the systemic nature of the problem until 2012. Even when he did become aware, the board said, Stumpf did not do enough to address the issues. Today's report also referenced an internal Wells Fargo report prepared 12 years ago, in 2004, which foretold the fake account scandal. That investigation, titled Gaming, warned that Wells Fargo employees had an incentive to cheat that was based on the fear of losing their jobs. It said that workers felt they couldn't meet the bank's unrealistic sales goals without gaming the system. With the newly announced clawbacks, Wells Fargo has taken back nearly $183 million from Stumpf, Ulstedt, and other executives. Wells Fargo has been fined $185 million by regulators and been the subject of two congressional inquiries. Until as late as 2015, even as sales practices were labeled a high risk in materials provided to the Board of Directors Risk Committee, there was a general perception within Wells Fargo's control functions that sales abuses were a problem of relatively modest significance. The report published today did not seem to recognize a failure on the part of the Board of Directors. No clawbacks there. And it doesn't look like the money in fines and clawbacks will do much to compensate the victims of Wells Fargo's fraud, specifically the customers and employees who tried to blow the whistle only to be fired for their efforts to be honest. We've talked in the past about the LIBOR rate rigging scandal, where various traders manipulated the daily fix, the daily price setting of the London Interbank Offered Rate, which affects trillions of dollars of transactions around the globe, everything from mortgage loans to credit card rates to complex derivatives. The scandal rocked the financial industry when it was uncovered in 2012. Now, today, the BBC has released an audio recording that implicates the Bank of England, the central bank of rate manipulation. According to the recording, the Bank of England repeatedly urged commercial banks to lower their LIBOR settings during the financial crisis. The BOE has consistently said it was not aware of the LIBOR manipulation until years after the rigging happened. In response to the BBC findings, the central bank noted that LIBOR and other global benchmarks weren't regulated in the UK or elsewhere during the period in question. The rate rigging scandal first came to public attention in 2012 when an internal investigation revealed that several major banks colluded to manipulate LIBOR. The recording calls into question evidence given in 2012 to the Treasury Select Committee by former Barclays boss Bob Diamond and Paul Tucker, the man who went on to become the deputy governor of the Bank of England. At the time, both said they had only recently become aware of rate manipulation. Meanwhile, Barclays CEO Jess Staley is in hot water. Staley is a veteran American banker, took over the helm at Barclays December 2015. He pledged to overhaul Barclays' culture, which had been in the spotlight due to the bank's involvement in rigging LIBOR, for which it was ordered to pay nearly £290 million. Staley is accused of twice attempting to use Barclays' internal security team to track down the authors of two anonymous letters. On the second occasion, the security team received assistance from a U.S. law enforcement agency, unnamed, but still failed to identify the individual whistleblower. The whistleblowing saga began in June 2016 when the board of Barclays received an anonymous letter and a senior executive received a second letter. These letters made allegations about a senior employee who had been recruited by the bank earlier that year. Staley has apologized for his actions and faces a significant cut in his bonus. Swift Transportation and Knight Transportation are merging in a stock swap deal, creating a company with a market value of more than $5 billion. Shareholders of Swift will own 54% of the new entity, and Knight shareholders the rest after the deal closes. The two companies earned about $5.1 billion in total revenue and $416 million in adjusted operating income last year. The companies expect to achieve about $15 million in cost-saving synergies and pre-tax revenue in the second half of 2017 and up to $150 million in 2019. The companies, both based in Phoenix, have a shared history. Jerry Moyes started Swift in 1966, while Randy Knight, who is a part owner of Swift, founded Knight Transportation along with three cousins in 1990. Knight's executive chairman, Kevin Knight, will assume the same title at the new company. Moyes, who retired as co-CEO of Swift last year, will become one of the directors of the new company. The Jerry Moyes family, however, will own about 24% of Knight Swift. The deal will create the largest truckload operator in North America. AT&T has announced it will buy Straight Path Communications, the holder of licenses to wireless spectrum, for about $1.25 billion in an all-stock deal, as it aims to accumulate the airwaves it needs for a 5G wireless network. AT&T's offer represents a 162% premium to Straight Path's closing price on Friday. After a partisan fight so deep it forced the Senate to go nuclear to confirm him, Neil Gorsuch was sworn in as the nation's newest Supreme Court justice this morning, filling the seat left vacant when Justice Antonin Scalia died a little over a year ago. In the final months of the Supreme Court's current term, Gorsuch could break a potential 4-4 deadlock on cases involving religious freedom, racial discrimination, immigration, and other issues. The court might also have to weigh in on Trump's executive order restricting travel from majority Muslim countries. And in the next few years, the justices are expected to consider new cases involving same-sex marriage, abortion, and gun rights. Toyota has said it will invest more than $1.3 billion in its Georgetown, Kentucky plant, largest factory for Toyota in the world. Although the investment does not include new jobs, the move signals a deepening commitment to the U.S. market. The 7.5 million square foot Kentucky plant makes several vehicles, including the Camry sedan, which Cars.com has dubbed the most made in America car in the U.S., based on an assessment of the car's components. What is the most valuable car company in the USA? No, it's not GM. At the end of January, short interest in Tesla made up about 35% of the float, or shares available for trading. Tesla was burning through cash and had only delivered 76,000 vehicles in 2016, well below the 80 to 90,000 that Wall Street was expecting. General Motors sold about 10 million cars in 2016. But a funny thing happened. Tesla shares have been moving higher. They're up 46% so far this year alone, a fact that has caused billions of dollars of losses for those who bet against it. As of today, Tesla now has a larger market capitalization than Ford or General Motors. Dow Jones Industrial Average today up 1 at 20,658, S&P 500 up 1 at 2357, and the NASDAQ Composite up 3 at 5880. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com for live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com, text, audio, and much more at eatthebankers.com.